everyone. Welcome to the Front Trench Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. I got my co-host, Mike Neff, alongside me via Skype. And Neff, just like the past couple of weeks, really the past couple of months, we got a lot to talk about this week. As has been the case, you know, recently with everything going on, the social justice issues and stuff we've seen in NASCAR. We've also got a 30-plus minute interview with Renee Montgomery, WNBA player of the Atlanta Dream, who's skipping out on the 2020 season to fight those social injustice issues going on in the world. And I want to preface that by saying we taped this on Monday, right as the race was starting, before, you know, evidently what was found out by the FBI on Tuesday, which I guess we should get into right now, Neff. Starting with the elephant in the room, late Sunday night, NASCAR put out a statement which I had to read a few times out loud to fully understand because I was in shock. And, you know, obviously NASCAR, you know, has racism roots, but over the past few years especially, Steve Phelps, I think, has done a tremendous job of trying to change that and, you know, not stick by its guard in the past. And it said that NASCAR had been made aware that there was a noose found in the 43 garage stall. Ultimately, that was found by one of Bubba Wallace's crew members. Bubba Wallace never saw it because, let's face it, drivers aren't even allowed in the garage. A lot of fans, you know, if you call yourself a fan, don't realize that drivers aren't even allowed in the garages right now because of the COVID-19 guidelines. But NASCAR called it a heinous act, and we're going to remove the peoples from the sport immediately. By Monday morning, 15 members of the FBI were involved searching the stall. By late Tuesday afternoon, it was announced the noose was found not to be a hate crime and rather just a garage pull-down rope. And there was at least been there since the fall of 2019. Neff, the Wood brothers came out with a statement shortly after NASCAR's statement yesterday, that was the team that occupied garage stall 4 last year. This is just a wild story. Ultimately, I think NASCAR may have jumped the gun a bit. Maybe the wording in the original statement, it could have been fixed up. But in this case, you got to err on the side of caution. And from a leadership perspective, I do think it hurts. But again, Steve Phelps is trying to change the sport and some of the past remarks it's had about it in the past.
I mean, you've heard him say they would have done the same thing whenever they found it. They would have acted the same way. And I agree with them. The only thing that I wish they had done different in the initial statement was to tell us that the noose was fashioned out of the pull-down cord. Because all these racist jerks on social media are latching onto that piece of it. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's a pull-down cord, they've always been there. You need a cord to tie a knot. I mean, I can't stress this enough. All these people are like, it wasn't a noose, it was a cord. It was a noose tied on the cord. And that's the piece that is just so infuriating about this is they're denying that there was a noose there and just focusing on the cord. It was still a noose. And for those people, like, every garage stall had them. Every garage stall had a cord. No other garage stall had a noose. And there's no excuse for it to say that you just dust this under the rug. And NASCAR is still investigating. Just because the FBI did not find it as a hate crime, NASCAR is still looking into this further and is probably going to come out with some kind of guidelines about not tying nooses in a garage, which would seem like that shouldn't be that hard to come out with. But the FBI even said, even outside of the heightened racial tensions that we have going on in the country right now, they would have investigated this the same way at any time because of the fact that it was a noose. And that is the piece that everybody reacted to, and I think everybody had a right to react that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the people that are saying that the people of Alabama were thrown under the bus and that a lifetime ban never should have been mentioned, hell yeah, it should have been mentioned. And I promise you, and I don't know an example and I can't prove it, but I promise you, 900 people in that garage, there's a racist son of a bitch in there somewhere. And probably multiple racist son of a bitches.
Whoa.
And all these guys that want to come out and talk about how it's the most anti-racist group in the world, it very well may be, but there are racists in there. And we need to weed them out. And if it takes catching somebody doing something like this, that's how we weed them out. If it takes arrogant, idiotic posts on social media to get you fired from your job, then we do it that way. Whatever it takes, we continue to see racist people show their true colors, and we're going to get them all out of our sport because our sport doesn't want them and we don't need them.
Yeah, unlike the past, NASCAR's moving in the right direction. You know, and you mentioned, you know, the racist son of a bitches, and that's a valid point because there's definitely, I would imagine there's many, not many, but maybe a few in the garage. And for instance, they are weeding themselves out. On Monday morning, after that was announced Sunday night, the statement NASCAR put out, Brandon Brown's gas can man, you know, his gas man came out with a statement, and he was then fired, as he should have been, for a dumb comment that he made. But in this case, what frustrates me the most is that people think it was staged. I've been seeing a lot of that on social media at the national level, at people just, you know, responding to people's tweets that I know or my tweets, you know. And people think NASCAR and Bubba just want attention. People think Bubba Wallace actually did this, which, as I said, Neff, and we've talked about this, when was it, Monday? That's impossible, literally impossible, with the COVID-19 guidelines. It was ironic, I think, that it was found in the 43 stall. That could have been any car there. It was just random that the 43 was there. It could have been the 4 car of Kevin Harvick, the 2 of Keselowski. It could have been anyone. But I'll tell you what, that rope looks just like a noose. Is a noose, I would say. Unfortunately, this is going to have people go after Bubba even more, I think, in NASCAR. Definitely on social media. Not the best look. But as you mentioned, they said if they had to do it over again, they would, and I second them. Now, maybe the wording in the original statement could have been different. Because it was an ongoing investigation that the FBI put up on Monday, that, you know, 15 members came to the track Monday. I don't know. I feel for NASCAR because they had all the right intentions. And just to know though, that it wasn't someone in the garage, that is a good thing, that it wasn't a hate crime. It wasn't a hate crime, which is very good. Ultimately, NASCAR benefits from that, I would say.
Without a doubt. And there's so many benefits out of this thing. And like I said, the only small thing that I would have changed would have been the wording of the statement to make sure that it was known to be fashioned out of the pull cord, because I think that would have changed everybody's post-discovery or post-announcement opinion once they came out and said it wasn't a hate crime. They would have known exactly what they were looking at and what started this whole thing. And I feel like that is the one piece of it that I would have changed. But I think it speaks volumes of the leadership of our sport. I think the actions on Monday by the drivers and the crews speaks volumes about the unity of our sport, mm-hmm. and that we're moving in the right direction. And I think the interesting piece is listening to the mainstream national sports media types who don't normally cover NASCAR that basically have repeatedly stated that that was a logical assumption because NASCAR has a racist past,
right,
and has to get over it.
And it's in the deep south in Alabama.
Right. And I think for those of us that are in the sport, we aren't racist and we don't like to be categorized that way, but it's a long road to hoe for us to get out of this. We're not going to eliminate 60 years of history in 2 weeks or 3 weeks or however long we've been going since Atlanta. It's going to be a long, slow process, but we do it by our actions. And the actions from this past weekend are a huge step in the right direction of proving that NASCAR is no longer a racist organization or has racist roots.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you. Look, I've tooted the horn of Steve Phelps for really the past year, really 2 years since he's came into play as the president of NASCAR. This might be a black eye, but they're going to rebound from this. He's made so much change in such short time. If we compare him to like Brian France or someone, I mean, the change is just insurmountable compared to what Brian had done over the past, you know, 2 years leading up to France's or to Phelps's, you know, in induction to NASCAR as the president. So I don't know. This is a tough subject to cover. It's a tough subject in general. It sucks that it even happened. I wish maybe a member from the Wood Brothers had said something last year when they saw this rope or this, you know, the garage pull down.
Yeah, but
you can't blame them though.
Last year, that wasn't a thing.
I totally agree.
That was all you looked at. But now in the era that we're in, you can't just look at it as a knot because right. there are racial overtones to it.
Absolutely. And especially right now, over the past month, a little over a month, yeah. with everything that's happened in the country, with all the rioting and the protests, which are all for peaceful protesting. You've said that on here. But then Bubba hopped on, and I feel for Bubba because he's got to be worn out. And then he even said this. I was reading an interview before we hopped on this morning that he talked to Dale Jr. yesterday for a video interview, but for a written interview. And I think Dustin Long wrote it up for NBC Sports. And Richard Petty came over to him before he hopped in the car on Monday and was like, this is where you get to kind of, you know, shut your brain off and go have some fun. Because what's going on, what he has to do outside of the race car right now can't be fun for him. He might be, not honored's not the right word, but he's the guy that's bringing this focal point to NASCAR. He's the guy speaking out and the guy that's being the leader in all of this, which as he should be. He's the only African-American full-time driver in the sport.
I mean, I understand your point if he should be, but
others should speak out.
He doesn't have a choice.
Right. Absolutely.
And he's never wanted to shy away from it. So I applaud him for that. But unfortunately for him, he hasn't had a choice.
Absolutely.
And
I totally agree.
I give him huge kudos for the way that he has stepped up and grabbed those reins and led this whole thing.
Yeah.
And I give credit to Jimmy Johnson as well. Because Jimmy was kind of the guy that initially got the driver thing going from Monday, and to Kevin Harvick for advancing it even more. And again, for everybody in the garage that just got on board with it, the crew members that wanted to be a part too, they heard about it was going to happen, and that was why all the crew members went along. And again, it just everybody in the sport, from PR people to leaders in NASCAR to leaders of teams, all seems to be getting on board.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we're dealing with these idiots on social media that are constantly trying to pick any little thing to nitpick on. And the fact that specific individual team owners have not made statements or issued releases or whatever, maybe they don't want to. Maybe they choose to handle it differently. Great piece from Angie Skinner the other day that Moody shared about how she's not a vocal person and she doesn't want to be making these statements. She would rather deal with it in her own way. And everybody's like that. There's people that don't feel comfortable getting out and making statements and getting in front of things. But back to your point about Steve Phelps, I love that guy, and I love where he is leading our sport and how he's leading our sport.
Yeah.
We were so rudderless under Brian, and the fact that Steve has grabbed it and he and Jim France are guiding us in a steadfast direction and not wavering, and that's the thing. You used to always see we'd make a statement, and then we'd kind of try to kowtow to other people, and Phelps is like, this is how it is. If you don't like it, get out. And I love that attitude about it, and I think it's going to be fantastic for the sport for years to come.
Yeah, and you brought up the moment for Monday, and regardless of what people take away from this whole situation that's, you know, happened over the past, as we speak, what, 72 hours, not even, you can't take away that moment pre-race on Monday with all the drivers unifying together. And we'd heard that there's going to be something. And then I had heard that this was what they were going to do. They were going to push the car to the front of the grid and then stand around Bubba for the anthem. And when I heard that, I was like, wow. And I might have even shed a tear because that was just a cool moment. And you pictured what was going to happen. And then it happened. And it was...
Yeah, but even picturing it, you couldn't...
Yeah.
It didn't do real life justice.
Didn't do it justice, yes.
I had the vision in my mind of what it was going to look like. But seeing it, I mean... And I don't want to get crazy with this and drawing analogies and stuff, but it really brought me back to Selma, Alabama, and Martin Luther King leading that, you know, civil rights march. And it's not the same thing, but parts of it are. And I really felt like, especially when you got that shot down pit lane and you just saw the sea of people that were all behind Bubba, and it was... I'm with you. I mean, I was tearing up. It was it was a truly moving moment that even though I knew it was coming, I couldn't really handle.
Yeah, it's one of the coolest moments I've seen in sports in my 25 years of existence. And like you said, Jimmy Johnson messages the group chat early Monday morning when he found out what was thought to happen with the news, with it being a hate crime, and he said he was going to go stand with Bubba during the anthem. Then Kevin Harvick responded and said, "Let's push the 43 to the front of the grid." That's just chilling, because that's just, it shows that no matter how hard you race each other, no matter how competitive you are with one another, that it's still not a brotherhood, but a family. NASCAR is a family. And that right there is why I love racing and why I love NASCAR, because it is a family. It was just really cool to see.
Agreed. And I know a fun little side note to it, but BJ McLeod has the greatest face masks. That dude he's always got skulls involved, and it's his thing. But man, his face mask just looks so badass sitting right behind Bubba there on pit lane. It kind of made me smile when that whole thing was going down that he was right in the middle of that.
All the drivers, Kyle Busch being at the front. Corey LaJoy being at the front.
Yeah, I thought that was appropriate. I don't know if they thought it out that way or if it just happened that way, but I thought it was kind of a statement having your defending series champion as one of the guys at the front pushing a car. I thought that was powerful.
Absolutely. And then Corey LaJoy being at the front, and obviously being Bubba's one of best friends growing up, they went to high school together. So I thought that was a good moment. I thought it was all a good moment. And something that I know I'll never forget that. That's something that you know where you were when you watched it. Now, if I was with you, we were getting ready to talk to Renee Montgomery, and I was crying because it was such a cool moment. But then, obviously what happened Tuesday, and Bubba hopped on CNN last night, and he's going to be on First Take today. He's got a lot of media coming up. And he said last night when he was on CNN, he was on there like 10:30 roughly. He's like, "Yeah, I'm going to turn my phone off right after I get off with this interview, and I'm going to turn it back on at 7:30 because he had more media to do." So he hopped on CNN last night being Tuesday night, and stated that he was pissed and that people were questioning his character. But he said, I'm paraphrasing, that he'll continue to stand tall and to continue to smile. And also said that from the evidence that he and NASCAR got, that it was absolutely a noose. So, again, it looked just like a noose. But Bubba, man, he's doing the sport proud. I'll tell you that. He's done a great job of being I don't know if you'd call him an advocate, but he's being an activist with everything that he's doing.
Yep, and being a leader and not shying away from it. And I think that's the coolest part of this is, and I've said this before, I've known Bubba since he was probably 11 or 12 years old running Legends cars, and have photographed next to him and have been there, got to be there for his win at Martinsville, which is one of the coolest things. And seeing him, a lot of people don't remember the short track shootout at Richmond years ago, and he almost beat Tony Stewart in that late model race, and nobody knew who he was at that point in time. And have just seen him grow from a kid into a man, and I think he has matured beyond his years, whether he wanted to or not. But I think his character and his determination are amazing, and I'm proud to call him friend.
Absolutely. He's one of the, from my experience, one of the nicest guys in the garage. And I know that's cliche to say. You could say that about any of them that you've had good interactions with. But in this case, it's true. I remember, I was telling the story to my girlfriend last night. I remember my first one-on-one interview with him was last year at Dover, the spring Dover race. And there was a good chance that it was going to rain Sunday morning, and they scheduled it for him and Courtney McGarry, his PR, scheduled it for Sunday morning right before the race. And I'm like, all right, whatever. And so I see him in the casino on the backstretch the night before. And I'm like, hey, I got an interview tomorrow. And Bubba and I had, conversations in the past, but never one-on-one, full at length. He's like, yeah, I know, and it was supposed to rain. He's like, if it rains, we're pushing that shit back. And it was just, that's classic Bubba. Like, you just get real, authentic emotion from him. It did rain, and we did push it back. I don't know, it was just, I'm so proud of, you know, who he's become and what he's doing. And man, when he took that, when he took the lead on Monday, I wish there was only, there's 5,000 fans there, but I wish there was however many Talladega holds.
100,000.
Yeah. Could you imagine that?
Yeah. The place would have gone crazy. It would have been unbelievable, but I mean, he's proven he's a pretty good super speedway racer, and to he and all of RPM's credit, that team has really stepped up more this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I give them credit that they're all kind of, you know, figuring out how to be faster and how to get further to the front and do things right. And it's a bummer that he ran out of gas. And you heard him post-race talking to those fans that he legitimately thought he could have won it, and he very well could have. But unfortunately ran out of gas on that caution. And thumbs up to Corey LaJoie for pushing him around. The way it was originally posted on social media by Freddie was that he pushed him around to the finish. And I'm like, God, I hope that ain't the case, because you're not allowed to do that. And then worked through it and figured out that they were talking about under the caution. Because if you push a car on the final lap that's out of power, that's against the rules.
Right.
Which goes way back in time.
Yeah, speaking of RPM, though, they have hit on something. Whether it's the new Chevrolet nose and the new Chevrolet body, RCR, obviously they're an affiliate team to them. They've improved. We see Reddick, you know, consistently running towards the front. He could have won the race the other day if he didn't need to get gas at the end. Austin Dillon's even been doing really well. And they have, speaking of they, RPM has 6 top 15s through the first half of their regular season. They had 5 all of last year. So there's definitely some improvements going on with that camp. And you mentioned the Corey aspect, and I found this hilarious on his... He put it on Facebook. I don't know if he put it on Twitter. But he, you know, SportsCenter Monday night came out with a picture of Corey and Bubba saying, Bubba Wallace's fodder, who you're talking about, Freddie Kraft, thanked fellow driver Corey LaJoie helping Wallace when he ran out of gas during Monday's race. Tuesday morning, Corey shared it and said, most of you may not know that I drove Bubba Wallace to school every day, so I'm just continuing to tally up his gas money invoice. So I thought that was hilarious. But ultimately, Bubba got up to 14th, and I think he could have had a shot to win had Denny not run out of gas in front of him, Denny Hamlin, and then him ultimately running out of gas the next lap. But Neff, from this whole week of experience, whole weeks of experience, I should say, in the sport, it shows a couple things to me. It shows that racism still exists. We've seen that with people outing themselves. I get a ton of positive, like, for instance, when I tweeted out what was going to happen pre-race, I got a ton of positive messages. But then there are some negative ones, too, which you're going to have. And it's just disheartening. It's frustrating for me. So I can only imagine how, you know, not just Bubba, but any people of color feel. It's hurtful. It's really hurtful, and no one should experience that. But
agreed. And, you know, the thing that's really starting to get under my skin, and I was just chatting with Kelly Crandall about this before we got on the podcast here. I'm sick and tired of people using social media as an excuse to be an asshole. I can't, you see so many people just post vile crap, and other people are like, eh, but it's social media, so you just give them a pass. No, words matter. Words hurt, and words show your true character. And the amount of just ridiculous junk that people post out there, and people dismiss it because it's social media, is ridiculous. We really have to start holding these people accountable that post garbage on social media. And I understand that everybody's allowed to have freedom of speech and freedom of this and freedom of that. Well, guess what? There's not freedom from consequences. Mm-hmm. And we got to see that from a couple different people this past week posting garbage and losing their jobs the next day. Because, well, let's face it, if that's your true character, we don't want you in our sport. We don't want you in our teams. And I'm with you. The amount of just obvious racist stuff, and people are like, I'm not a racist. I'm like, look at what you just wrote. And the fact that you're blaming it off that it was a cord and not a noose. It's still a noose. And it was still in our only black driver's stall. And it was still the only one out of 40 cords that were tied that way. There's reason for why this stuff goes down. But just the I mean, it's it just constantly reminds me of how far we have to go with this thing. And you could call me whatever names you want. You can say I support whatever whatever you feel I support. But I just basically support everybody being treated and loved as each other and no other parameters involved. And if that's bad, then, you know, color me bad. But I love everybody, even the racist assholes, and I continue to pray that they'll get better. I've seen a few different posts in responses to things that I was firing back at people that were like, oh, thanks, I didn't realize that. I appreciate the knowledge. And those posts are the ones that really move me the most, because you realize that you can make a difference and you realize that people can change. There was a young man a couple days ago posted something about the fact that, you know, he was a proud supporter of the flag, and Monday morning or Monday early afternoon when he saw that whole support movement on pit lane, he went out and took his flag down and he decided to change. And, you know, you're not going to change everybody. There's hate in everybody. Well, there's hate in people that is there, and you're not going to move it out of them. But I love that people are making a difference. And for the people that say Bubba pissed off 90% of the fan base and drove them away, well, the ratings say that that 90's already been replaced and we got more coming. So if that 90% left, good riddance, and don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you.
Yeah, and that's a good point. But Brad Doherty, I mean, the only really minority owner in the Cup Series, I listened on SiriusXM Radio yesterday, and he said that he anticipates we lose 5% of the fans. However, losing that 5, we gain 20% net gain. So, look, I'm all for, you know, Bubba speaking out and NASCAR continuing to take the step that it's taken over the past really 2.5 weeks now, starting at Atlanta when Steve Phelps came over the radio, talked to all the drivers, and then Bubba wearing the Black Lives Matter, I Can't Breathe shirt, pre-race, and everything that's happened since then, the Black Lives Matter car at Martinsville. I support all of it. But now, switching subjects now. It's hard to switch subjects because that's such a heartfelt subject to talk about.
Oh, yeah, and I'm so fired up about it.
Yeah, but there was racing to talk about from the weekend, and very good racing at that. Ryan Blaney was victorious on Monday and was the highest viewership for a Monday race since 2014. Obviously, some of that was because of what happened the night before. But the race was action-packed, great photo finish. Eric Almirola slid backwards across the finish line, placing third. What more could you want? This was a great Talladega race.
And Almirola could have been upside down and on fire. But other than that, I think everything else was pretty good. Yeah, I was pleasantly pleased because we had action all day. There were comers and goers. Sometimes a high line worked. Sometimes a low line worked. You had runs. You had amazing saves.
Oh my God, Blaney
was freaking.
He rocked. He just saved it.
Almost on the back stretch, he just didn't hit anything. and he kept going. That was the thing.
Never cracked.
He was like a car length back when he got hit, and he went to the lead without lifting. It was unreal.
Never cracked the throttle.
You had strategies involved that ultimately didn't pay out at the end. Guys ran out of fuel, and it just. I felt like it was aggressive racing the whole time. Yes, you had your guys that hung out at the back that came on at the end, but you still had guys at the front that wanted to lead and were trying to get to the lead all the time. And I thought it was a very entertaining super speedway race. And I was happy to see fans back in the stands. And obviously there were some new fans there, which was really cool. I thought the entire day from the lead up to the anthem all the way through the checkered flag was highly entertaining and kept me glued to the TV the whole time.
Except for the rain delay in the middle, which is another.
But even then, it was a rain delay for one corner. We didn't have to save the whole track. It only took an hour, I think.
Which,
how cool is that? We had a microclimate in turn one. That was remarkable.
Which I think we got lucky because there was weather all around, and I think that had an impact on the racing because a lot of people thought we were only racing halfway, and if that's the case, well, you better be at the front at halfway. But I think another result of why we had good racing was because of the aero dynamic changes that we saw from Daytona. Ultimately, it lowered the horsepower, which means it slowed the speed down by a couple miles per hour, to which hopefully we didn't have something that happened at Daytona on the last lap. But I think this package allowed the drivers to really show out their talent. And that never hurts when the drivers actually have an impact. As we've seen over the past, I don't know, year and a half now, almost, with the current package that we have on the intermediate tracks. But I thought this was great from start to finish. Very entertaining. Never got single file against the wall, which is, you know, the boring part of super speeder races sometimes when the 30 laps, 50 laps, they're just running against the wall. We never had that. And it was action-packed. Very, very good racing.
Absolutely. And cool, exciting video that was posted on Twitter from Sunday while they had the Air Titans out on a track. one of them got a little bit loose on there in the banking up in 1 and 2. That guy had to be panicking because that thing looked about like Blaney did coming down the back straight. And another thumbs up. I don't know who did it. I'm assuming somebody that works at Talladega did it. But in the middle of 1 and 2, or a little closer to 2, on the infield, somebody had, I don't know if they mowed it or if they sprayed weed killer or what they did, but they had spelled out love in the infield inside the entrance of turn 2. And I thought that was just a cool thing. It was really subtle, but somebody captured a screen capture of it and shared it on Twitter, and I thought it was really cool that whoever it was took the time to do that. Again, all in encompassing what we're doing right now, but I love the race from beginning to end. I would be very happy if every super speedway race was that way. And also a thumbs up to NASCAR for not throwing a caution for the wreck on the backstretch on the final lap. They very well could have. I wouldn't have blamed them if they did, but they let it go and they let it play out because they knew, which I've argued forever, that by the time the cars got back around to where that incident is, the safety people could already be out there and working, and they're not going to be flying by them and putting people in danger. So I like the fact that they let the race finish organically and didn't throw the caution as the leaders were like mid 3 and 4.
Absolutely. And it set up for a great finish. And, you know, Blaney's becoming one of the best super speedway drivers in the garage. He's won 2 of the last 3. The last 2 at Talladega's won by 7 thousandths of a second. That's crazy.
Yeah, amazing.
That's crazy.
7 thousandths is a blink of an eye to begin with, but to do it twice times in a row is unreal.
In the last 3 races, including the Daytona 500, have been photo finishes involving Blaney at super speedways. He's always showed flashes, leading 118 laps in the 518. Finished runner-up in 17 to Kurt Busch. But he looks like he's really honed in on his craft and Penske's always good at these tracks. You know, Joey Logano's got, what, 3 wins at Talladega? 3 of the last 10? And he's won the 500. Kozlowski's won, what, 5 at Talladega and 1 at Daytona in the July race, or what was July race. I would say across the board, they've got the best trio or best team of speedway drivers, super speedway drivers. And Blaney's really proven to be one of the best in the garage, I feel.
Well, and he's just proven he's fast in general.
Yeah.
I mean, look at
very his good season
results over the last 7 or 8 races. He's got 1/40th, and everything else in there is 4th or better.
Yeah.
I mean, he has been getting it done, and it was just a matter of putting the whole thing together. And I know some purists don't like to see it. He was driving like a wee bit of an asshole coming down through the tri-oval to the finish line, but you're coming to the finish, and there's no one move blocking rule like you have in IndyCar. So he's making that car as wide as he could. And it ultimately led to Eric Jones hitting the wall. I'm pretty positive if Blaney hadn't side bumped him, it wasn't a side draft, it was a side bump, that Jones would have got by him and grabbed that win. But it was a bit of driving and a bit of Hail Mary there at the end, but he pulled it off. And also, thumbs up again to Ricky Stenhouse. There's few things that make me want to see every race be a super speedway race on the schedule, but God, if we could have Ricky Stenhouse in a super speedway every single week, that would be worth it, because that dude is just nuts when it comes to super speedway racing.
Yeah, he's the price of admission alone, I feel like, some of the stuff he makes. And, you know, good finish for him, too. A photo finish, finished second. It's his third top five with JTG, which is the most top fives they've had in a single season with one driver since their first year in Cup with Marcos Ambrose, when he had five. We're only just over a third of the way through the season. And Stenhouse has been inconsistent, but when he's been on, it's been really good. So we'll have to see how, you know, compare him to, like, Ryan Preece's teammate, and it's night and day this year. Unfortunate for Preece. But, yeah, you mentioned Erik Jones. I thought he was going to win it, too. He had a hell of a run coming, you know, halfway down the front stretch, coming to the checkers. And maybe John Hunter, too. John Hunter had a big run. I don't think he would have got the win, but maybe second or third. But ultimately, he was put in the wall via Jones bumping into him via a bump from Blaney. So, you know, Nemechek finished eighth. Jones finished fifth. Still good finishes, good outings for those guys. But yeah, very good race from start to finish. And I think this is what we need going forward at our super speeder races that have been inconsistent over the past couple of years. But this is a step in the right direction.
Without a doubt. I mean, there's a bunch of these teams and drivers that are improving and getting better, and I think it speaks volumes for our sport going forward. I always worry that what happens when the big owners move on, and for lack of a politically correct answer, they're old. I mean, Rick Hendrick, Roger Penske, Joe Gibbs, they're old. Richard Childress, they're all old.
Buddy.
And they're going to be moving on. And whether their organizations continue at the level that they're currently at or not, we will see. But I love the fact that some of these younger teams, and to throw it out to somebody that's in, you know, runs the occasional upper-level race but is really good in Xfinity, Colleague Racing. Man, are they putting some stuff together.
We're going to talk about them a little bit.
Yeah, they're a team that's going to be a power in the future, I think. So it's great to see these young talents and these young teams putting things together and battling with the big guns, because, you know, the sport continues to have more and more parity. And with the new car coming out, I think that's only going to be exemplified. And that gives these lesser funded teams and smaller teams a better chance. And it's always that way on the super speedways. But I think just in general, these teams are starting to battle the big guns more and more.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you, Neff. But it's time to talk about Manscaped.
It is, my friend. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, the reopening is right around the corner, and there's a chance that no one has seen your balls in a few months. Don't ruin your first post-quarantine date with a ball fro. And needless to say, a ball fro is not a good scene. Would you show up to your first day of school without a haircut? Manscaped is here to provide you the best tools for your grooming experience. Speaking of grooming experiences, Dustin, have you ever had a good manscaping experience right before a big date?
Oh, I was hoping you'd bring this up. I have. College. Fun times in college. Yeah, always shave your balls, because you never know what could happen later that night. Now, Neff, the Lawnmower 3.0 is the best hygiene tool for the modern man. Because of their ceramic blade and skin-safe technology, your snag will be reduced while preparing yourself for post-quarantine life. Manscaped forever changing the grooming game with their Perfect Package 3.0 Essentials Kit.
Don't forget, the Perfect Package 3.0 comes with the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0. It is water-resistant, has a cordless body trimmer, performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag for you to use when you're done quarantining. The Perfect Package 3.0 also comes with the Crop Preserver and Crop Reviver. The Crop Preserver is anti-chafing ball deodorant that ensures that your afternoon stroll doesn't end with your balls sticking to your leg. And we all know how uncomfortable that is. Oh. The Crop Reviver, it's a spray-on toner for your balls. It's made with soothing aloe and witch hazel extracts that will give your balls the boost they need.
Subscribers of the Peak Hygiene Plan get a new replacement blade refill for your lawnmower trimmer delivered to your front door every 3 months, making sure your trimmer stays fresh and clean. The light is at the end of the tunnel, fellas, so treat yourself for making it through quarantine life with the Lawnmower 3.0. Get 20% off and free shipping with code FRONTSTRETCH at manscaped.com. Again, get 20% off and free shipping with the code FRONTSTRETCH at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code FRONTSTRETCH. Your first date will thank you. All right, Neff. Want to talk a little bit more. You brought up Kylie Grayson. I want to talk a little bit more about them because I thought the Xfinity race was also entertaining at Talladega, and Kylie controlled the event for most of it with Ross Chastain and Justin Haley primarily. AJ Allmendinger played a strategy, you know, running for the dash for cash, where he stayed in the back because there's no points to run for the 16 team.
Right.
But Haley ended up winning. Ross Chastain got the 100,000. Haley becomes the second youngest driver to win in all three national series, a little over 21 years old, only behind Kyle Busch. I thought it was interesting how he noted he's still looking for a job next year, where he's really proven, in my opinion, this is no disrespect to like Ryan Truex or Blake Koch, but Haley's kind of up the ticket colleague and has been the best driver they've had in terms of results.
Yeah, I would agree. I was surprised, pleasantly surprised at the driver that he's become. I felt like early on in his career, he might have been a bit reckless, and I'm sure there's those that might think he still is a little on the reckless side, but I think it's more that he's aggressive. And in the modern world of NASCAR, aggression is rewarded. And occasionally you're going to tear stuff up and you're going to have bad results, but you're also going to get wins. And to see that he has come to where he is refreshing. I remember his truck win at Charlotte, and that morning I had been walking through the garage talking to some buddies on some truck teams, and he walked by, and he just looked like the cock of the walk. I mean, just confident, let's say, to an almost cocky or arrogant side. And the two guys both looked at me and are like, how is that dude so cocky when he's never won crap? And so he won the race, and in the post-race interview, I asked him, I'm like, before this race, you'd never won in any of the national series, and yet watching you walk through the garage today, you could tell that you were brimming with confidence. What gave you that? And he went into an explanation of how he simply believes in his abilities and thinks that he can win anytime he's on the track. And that has boosted his career, and I think that's also boosted Colleague, that he has that confidence, and Colleague has given him the equipment, and combined, it's worked out for some wins.
Yeah, and I will say, he is very confident. And like you said, was so in trucks, and he had to bring sponsorship to the table at GMS. Then he had a championship four season, made it to the championship four in 2018, and then was brought to the Xfinity Series last year with a colleague, had, I think, 20 top 10s. I'm not looking at his stats right now, but I believe it was 20 top 10s, four or five top fives. The most success they've ever seen. Now, granted, that same year last year, Allmendinger and Ross Chastain both won in part-time efforts, but that was at Allmendinger's specialty, a road course, being the Roval. And also at Daytona, where anything can happen. So they've yet to win on a traditional oval, but I think they're on their way. Sorry, I take that back. Allmendinger won a couple weeks ago at Atlanta, but Haley has not won yet on a traditional oval in the Xfinity Series. But he's been close, and I think he's getting there, and he's really starting to. He's in the front almost every week now, battling. Like Bristol, for instance, he probably should have finished second or third, maybe even won the race, and then he got wrecked. So I think he's improved quite a bit over the past year, you know, since being in Xfinity. And he's got Ross Chastain to lean on, who's got a ton of experience, as does AJ Allmendinger, even if it may not be an Xfinity car. So I think Colleague's the future, man, especially the Xfinity Series. If they deem to go to Cup, which they ran the 500 this year, Matt Colleague is not going to let that team down. You know, the drivers speak so highly of him. And Chris Rice. Chris Rice is one of the nicest guys in NASCAR and very entertaining. So, yeah, Colleague Racing's doing a tremendous job, and they've improved a great deal in the past year and a half.
Without a doubt. And again, it was a great race because the Xfinity package is a great package.
Oh, Xfinity's great.
I mean, I... there was that little stretch in there where they got kind of single filed up by the wall. But at the same time, it was almost old school single file where you had dudes, and Chase Briscoe was doing it a bunch, where you would, you know, you would head down and there'd be a gap develop in front of the car in front of you, or you would lag back and allow that car in front of you to get a little bit ahead, then get a run to the corner and dive to the bottom, slide back up in front of them, or muscle your way back in line if you could. If not, you went to the back. And Allmendinger did it a few times in the last segment, but Briscoe did it most of the race. And it just, it's kind of fun to watch that unfold when guys have to literally pick them off one at a time, and you don't get down and have four or five cars form a line and push the whole line forward, but you really kind of do it on your own. And it's a different style in super speedway racing, but man, it's fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Neff, you got any final thoughts on Talladega before we get to predictions for a long weekend and big weekend of racing in Pocono?
I just thought it was a great show. Thanks to the Talladega folks for putting people in the stands. Mm-hmm. I thought it was great for our first exposure to that. And I hope that more and more governors realize that, that we got to get back to work in this country and get our economy going again. But kudos to everybody in the garage for stepping up, getting behind Bubba, and just getting against social injustice. And in the long run, our sport is going to be so much better because of the people in it and the people leading it.
Agreed, tenfold. And I think this, I think Monday's action of the drivers and the teams, all the teams, the whole sport, it's going to go down as one of the biggest moments in NASCAR history. That picture, the selfie that Bubba Wallace took, that's going to live on forever, which is great. And I'm so happy that for Bubba and for all the drivers now, that are standing up for social injustice issues. Ty Dillon's been a big advocate for all this too, trying to learn. And that's all that we can do, I feel like. And that's what we did in the interview we got coming up with Renee Montgomery. I want to learn. I want to know more about why this happens. And there might not be an answer. And I think that's why the African-Americans like Renee are speaking out and trying to make an impact on society. And I think it's working. This feels different than any other race-related incident in the past, in my opinion, over the past month. So, with that said, Neff, we do have a lot of racing this weekend at Pocono. We have the first Cup doubleheader of the year. We'll probably have two more. And then also we've got trucks and Xfinity. We'll start off with the truck race. I believe Ross Chastain, I haven't even looked at an entry list. I know Kyle Busch is not running. I guess I'll start off. I'll go, Grant Enfinger's on a little bit of a roll. He's won two races this year. I'll go Grant Enfinger for a third win.
That's a decent pick. I'll give you that. I think, and this is going to be an odd one because he's really not known for being a Pocono killer, but I'm going to go with Johnny Sauter. That team has shown flashes, but has just not been putting races together. And I love me some Johnny Sauter. If you're over 18 and you like to listen to radio chatter, he is a great listen.
Oh, my God.
For those of you that are under 18, it is definitely R-rated, so you don't want to be listening to that, kids. Wait till mom and dad give you permission. But God almighty, I like Johnny because he's one of those unfiltered dudes, and he lets you know. I mean, I've literally seen him leading by 20 car lengths or truck lengths and just on the radio cussing about what a piece of garbage his truck is. And he's like, dude, you're smoking him. And he's like, I don't give an F. This thing's the biggest effing piece of heaven. I'm just like, God, it's fun to listen to. So, yeah, he's not really a big Pocono guy, but I'm going to go Johnny Sauter to shock the world this weekend.
Now, that's on Saturday. The first Cup race is on Saturday, but I want to skip to Sunday with the Xfinity race. It's the final Dash for Cash race, meaning that only Xfinity drivers are in the field. And you got Austin Cindric, Justin Haley, Ross Chastain, and Alex LeBay competing for the $100,000 bonus. This, I hope this is an entertaining race, because the Pocono Xfinity races, last year's was good. Last year's was really good. A lot of that was because of the finish with Cole Custer and Tyler Reddick. Tyler Reddick slipping up on the final corner, allowing Custer to get by. But since they've gone there in 2016, haven't been the most entertaining races.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it is what it is. Pocono, I love Pocono. I know a lot of people badmouth Pocono and wish it only had one race and all that. I love Pocono, and it's probably because of my technical side and working on cars and watching race cars. But it's compromise. You cannot get all three corners perfect.
Yeah, they're all different.
And so you have to, you know, you have to get three right, because that's where you get your runs down the front stretch and make your passes. But usually if you've got three right, one is a compromise and you got to kind of fudge with it. Well, going into one, you're doing 2010, looking at a wall that is more than a 90-degree wall to you. And you've seen some of the wrecks that have happened in there in the past. And you're like, man, I hope this thing sticks and turns. And you got to do that every lap of the race. And it just that.
See a lot of brake failures.
Going through the tunnel turn is, I mean, that separates the men from the boys. You got to have a big set of cajones to be able to get it through there and have the momentum to get the three. So I love the way that course just, I feel like it brings out the drivers. And I honestly think that's a benefit for LeBay this weekend, because of his road racing skills.
Yes.
Because I think road racers tend to do better at Pocono because of the braking going into one and just the adapting to the different corners. So LeBay's going to have a shot, but I can't go against Chase Briscoe. I mean, that team is just – they're constantly having stupid crap happen that's taken them out of races lately, but as long as they're running at the finish with a car that's all in one piece, I'm going with the 98.
Chase Briscoe's obviously a good pick. Allgaier needs something to go right. And he could have won this race last year, but an Allgaier thing happened late and he spun out, going for the lead on a restart. I'm going to go Noah Gragson, though, because just like Briscoe, I think Gragson has proved this year that I think the championship right now runs through those two teams. He's won, what, two races, been in contention and won a whole lot more. Could have won this weekend at Talladega. Still came back to finish 10th after a late spin. So I think Noah Gragson, his maturity and his leadership of this 9 team with Dave Elms is going to propel them to a third win. And also Junior Motorsports runs fairly well here, so we'll see how that goes. Then we got two cup races, Neff. You gotta run the same car, as long as you don't crash it. Same engine, same everything. It's, what, 675 miles of action this weekend, which is a lot for one weekend at Pocono. Now, unlike in years past, man versus machine, in terms of the engine, that won't be a factor, especially with no practice or qualifying, where that puts more increased amount of added pressure on that engine. So we'll start with Saturday. Who you got winning the first of the two races at Pocono?
Race number one, I'm going to go with Kyle Busch. I think that the Toyotas are finally starting to show some strength. And he's pretty strong at Pocono. I just feel like that. And to be this far in a season without a victory.
Yeah.
And really not really been in contention for many coming down to the end. It can't go on like that forever. I'm going to vote on the Kyle Busch win for race number one.
Which over the past 4 years or so at Pocono, him and Harvick have been the best. For that matter, I'm going with Harvick since you took Kyle Busch. I do think Kyle, it's very odd for him not to have a win halfway through the regular season now. But Harvick's been fast every week. Was leading on the last lap at Talladega just on Monday. Not that matters at Pocono, but I think Harvick, he's never won at Pocono. I think 6 second place finishes. I think he finally captures a victory at the Tricky Triangle on Saturday. And with that...
The closer didn't close on Sunday again.
With that, Neff, Sunday... I mean, for the Darlington races, the race that we've seen back-to-back, Darlington and Charlotte so far, a lot of teams didn't take the same car. Harvick did when he won Darlington. He took the same car back for the night race that Wednesday. Yep. But a lot of drivers or a lot of teams did not take the car back. This time, they're kind of forced to take the same car. So for that instance, whoever's good on Saturday is probably going to be good on Sunday because the races are, you know, essentially at the same time, both days, yep, in the afternoon. So who you got winning Sunday?
I am going to go with Fire Suit. We're going to put Joey Logano. He's had some okay runs at Pocono, but the Penske crowd has just shown on the second day of these back-to-backs, they have strength. And I'm going to go with Logano to get it done on Sunday.
And because of that, I'm going to go with Chase Elliott because he's also shown strength on these back-to-back days. I think Darlington was running third when he got wrecked or second when he got wrecked. Then won the night race at Charlotte, the second night race on the Wednesday. I think Chase Elliott gets his first victory at Pocono. Neff, we got a good interview coming up with Renee Montgomery. I've teased it a couple times now and in the open. We covered a lot in this interview to educate ourselves further on the social injustice topics going on in the real world. I thought, and I think you could agree with this, Renee was great. Very knowledgeable.
Yeah.
I think people should definitely listen to this as we cover everything from her decision and her thought process of sitting out this upcoming WNBA season to how she got into NASCAR as a fan and how racism is taught in educational systems and beyond. Again, this was taped Monday. I do want to preface that because it was before the FBI investigation came back. So there is a comment about the noose in there. But, Neff, any thoughts before we get to this?
Nah, I was honored that she chose to talk with us. How this came about, I saw her posted on Twitter that she was taking in NASCAR for the first time. And I sent her a direct message, which kudos to her for having her DMs open and told her, you know, if she had questions about the sport or whatever, I'd be glad to answer them. And when she came out with her statement that she wasn't going to play this year, I asked her if she'd be interested in being on the podcast. And she absolutely jumped on board. And it was so good. And I, in all honesty, you know, this thing's an organic situation and things are dynamic. We don't know if it's going to happen, but it would be really neat if we maybe have her be a monthly guest. And every month we kind of take the temperature of where the movement's at and how things are going and what has happened and what still needs to happen. So really intelligent, really fun discussion, and I think it adds a lot of value and a lot of perspective on what's going on.
Agreed, and I think I can speak for you. We just want to become more knowledgeable on this subject. You know, I know we've had firsthand encounters in talking to one another about wanting to become more educated with this whole topic. And I think that's what Renee did with us on Monday, helped educate us. So let's get to our conversation with Renee Montgomery. All right, welcoming in for the first time to the Front Stretch Podcast, Renee Montgomery, player in the WNBA. Hi, Renee.
What's up, Dustin? How you guys doing?
We are doing well.
We're great. Actually, no longer a player in the WNBA, now a social justice activist that will hopefully be back in the WNBA once we get this whole mess figured out.
Yes. So we want to dive right there, Renee, because last week, we might as well start with the elephant room. Last week, you announced you weren't going to play in the 2020 WNBA season when it does start. You wrote a great piece for the Players Tribune, read it, awesome. So you've described why, but I want you to take us through your process on how this came about and your decision of ultimately not playing and standing up for social injustice.
I know what got me to the WNBA, and then I recognize that right now, leading up to it, everybody's talking about the season. It's so exciting. I'm like, I'm not doing those normal things that I do to get myself ready. That also was because there was a whole pandemic and we were quarantined, but I just started to realize that people were asking me questions about the WNBA, and I just, at this moment, was not interested in sports. I was interested in, like, do you guys see that there's a whole, like, movement happening? That was kind of my thought process when people would ask me. And so then I realized, like, that's where my heart is right now. So that's kind of the backstory, how I got to my decision.
And it's been,
I guess my first question on that is what your, as this thing was kind of developing, when did you first realize that you yourself was getting more engrossed in the movement than in basketball?
I would say the moment, so I was quarantined, you know, I actually went to the Hawks game, the game that, you know, everything shut down after the last game of the season for a lot of NBA players. I was physically at that game. And so then I had received some emails. I worked for Turner Studios and I worked for ESPN. So I started receiving some emails, you know, some people in the stations might have tested positive. You guys might want to quarantine. So I'm like, what? And this is before we even knew what it was, you know? So I had been quarantined all the way up until the moment that I went up to the protest, just to kind of put it into perspective, like that dynamic of I wasn't going to leave my house. But then, like, I felt like that was so important that I left my house, left my quarantine of like 8 weeks to go out to the protest to hand out some waters and stuff.
That's cool. Right. It's good. Yeah. Whenever anyone speaks out, there's going to be, you know, negative feedback. There's also going to be positive feedback. So for you, what has been the feedback primarily over the past week?
Oh, man, it's been, like, pretty much positive. I was actually surprised because, you know, that conversation about athletes sitting out had already been a thing before I announced it. You know, because the NBA, everybody knew about the call, the Zoom call. So that was already a conversation, like, that players might sit out, and the response to that was not good before I announced it. But then when I announced, you know, people received me well, which I'm so thankful of, because I didn't, you know, I just didn't really know what to expect.
And I'm curious, have you had negative feedback come in? There was multiple guys on the NBA side saying that they didn't want to play because of the movement and that they were really interested in being focused on that rather than playing. But at the same time, you always get those negative Nellies that think it's just an excuse. Have you had that negative pushback from people to say you just don't want to take a chance on getting the virus by playing?
Oh, I've seen, you know, the trolls are, but I'm always in the chat. So, yes, I've seen trolls. You know, one interesting thing, and that's why I'm glad we're even going to have this conversation, is, you know, West Virginia has been known to not be the most welcoming as far as when it comes to things, you know? And so even me talking to a West Virginia paper, and one of the first things they said was, you know, we want to fact check a couple things because we know that, you know, you went to Capitol, and so people in West Virginia understand that Capitol is a school that's not predominantly white. So they skipped past me being in a predominantly white school, all of my elementary, predominantly white, all of my middle school. And then the one year that I went to a high school that wasn't, you know, they wanted to talk about, well, I know you put a lot of media that you grew up with predominantly white, but in Capitol that one year it wasn't. And I'm like, that's the problem. Like, look at the narrative. You're trying to, it was almost trying to fact check me and see if, like, what I was telling the national press was the truth. So for me, it was like, yeah, this is why we need a lot of work done, because my own home paper, you know, they almost was trying to, like, fact check me instead of just support me. And then, you know, one of my managers looked it up and it's like, okay, I'm sorry, where she grew up was 94% white. So it wasn't all white, but, you know, like that was the fact check. Like, it was 94% white, just so to clarify to people.
And I want to hit on that because I feel like, you know, I'm from Central New York, not a lot of African-Americans around. I think there was two in my entire grade and we had like 78 people in the grade, very small school. So kind of, you know, small town USA. So you kind of mentioned what it was like, but let's get more into it. What was it like growing up as, you know, in a predominantly white schools?
Awkward. It was awkward. You got to think as a kid. So when I was a kid, elementary, I think in my elementary school, I really might have been the only black student there. I'm not positive. I can't remember any other ones. So and in middle school. So when you're a kid, like, the only thing you want to do is be like everybody else. You don't want to be like the only kid that's black or the only one kid that's different. And that was just my reality. Like, I, like, would cry because I did not want to go to, you know, Black History Month was always such a torture because I was the only black kid. So it was awkward. You know, it was awkward that my friends, like, you know, like, they would be, like, uncomfortable in a sense. You know, there was that elephant in the room on Black History Month. So for me, it was, you know, it wasn't like I got bullied or picked on. It was just that I just knew I was different.
Did you get stuck having to do all the work on all the presentations for Black History Month since you were the only black student?
They better not. No, you know, and it was, that's funny. No, we all had our own assignments, but if there was a group project, they better not have tried that. But no, it's funny. That's a great question. But nah, it was more so just we just learned about different things. You know when people have to raise their hand and answer questions, like, I would never raise my hand. Even if I knew the answer, I'm not raising my hand. Like, so it was just that kind of, just think of a kid. You know, kids don't want to stand out. That's just not something that's cool.
And I'm curious, when you mentioned in your article that you then went on to Connecticut, to UConn, and you were still in kind of an all-white environment, and being naive, I'm from the Midwest, and I live in the South now, and I've never really spent a whole heck of a lot of time in the New England area. I always envisioned UConn and Boston and that whole kind of area being a real melting pot, but from the sound of it, outside of what we see on the basketball court, everything else, UConn seems to be pretty lily white.
Well, that's the thing. There would be this joke that if you saw other black people on campus, they were an athlete. Like, that was kind of the running joke. You would say, what's up? Like, you'd be like, oh, what's up? What sports do you play? Like, there might be track. You know, there's different sports. So there were black people there. But I'm just saying, these are still considered predominantly white schools. They're not predominantly black schools. They're not predominantly minority school. So that was my point. You still were the minority. So I was the minority in that, like, in to contrast of the way the story is told. It's the contrast here in Atlanta. Now in Atlanta, it's a whole different story where I'm at now. So that's why it's like that contrast of my whole life. Like, I felt like I was, like, different. And then I finally get to Atlanta and it's like, well, things feel very normal here.
Now, this interview is probably going to be all over the place, but we just want to get a big picture narrative. So I want to go back to elementary school a little bit. Up here anyways, in the north, like, I'm in Central New York, like I said, so the Syracuse area, I personally don't think they'd speak about, you know, racism enough in grade school. I just don't. You know who Martin Luther King is, you know what he did, you know what he stands for, but you don't know much else, I feel like. So do you feel like people just aren't educated about this topic, per se?
They're not, because it's not a part of our schooling, like you said. And that's, so when people talk about, like, well, what things do you want to change, you know, in the history books you usually only talk about three people. You talk about, like, you know, the Montgomery boycott, you talk about Martin Luther King, you talk about Malcolm X. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not a lot of different black activists' names, but you can hear, I don't know how many different colonels, sergeants that were part of different wars. Like, you know, that part of history is well developed, it's well researched, it's well taught. We need to teach the other side of history so that maybe and make it just all one part of history. These things happen. If we're doing timelines, put the timelines where they belong. And I think that would help in a sense of normalizing it. And that's the thing. So you said that you didn't have very many black people in your school. Two in your grade. Yeah. And so you ever, as you were a kid, I'm sure not because you were a kid, but you ever think of how awkward that would be when y'all were talking about black things? You know what I mean? As a kid.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I can only imagine.
Yeah. So as a kid, it was like, it was history and everybody's like, good, you need to recognize black history. Well, it should be just part of the history books. It shouldn't just be this month, Black History Month, and now we're going to talk about all things black. Like, no, I don't think that's the way to go. I just think that, like, you should probably just, if in 1965 something happened or 1865, put it where it goes. If a colonel won this war and then the Montgomery boycott happened, it should go chronologically. You know, like, I don't understand why, like, we have this one month to talk about things and then the rest of the months to just put it chronologically.
Yeah, and I want to kind of go down that history path, because unfortunately, it's from the mindset of the history books and what we've been taught growing up, but there's so much that we don't know because it's not taught. And that the thing that's really stuck out to me in the last couple of weeks is learning about the Black Wall Street Massacre in Tulsa and the fact that this whole area was basically eliminated and people were killed en masse. And I'd never heard about this before 2 weeks ago. And I'm like, how is it possible for an event like that to happen and nobody ever tell us about it? But it's like the people that are putting the history books together kind of sweep that under the rug because they don't want it to be that uncomfortable. But history can be uncomfortable, and if we don't learn about it, we're going to repeat it. So from the history side of things, did you learn stuff from family and friends by word of mouth that you weren't taught in the history book side of things?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, there's so many different things, just stories about my mom, you know, like one of the stories she told me. So this is the same area I grew up in, St. Albans, West Virginia. And my Snook grew up in that same area, and she ended up going to St. Albans High School.
And Snook is what she calls her mom, for those of you that didn't read the article.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, I have all kinds of stories because it's parents' stories, but she told me about a story where at high school they had a talent show, and one of the preacher's kids was performing, and a lot of the white students were throwing pennies at that student performing, and the black students were getting upset that no faculty stopped it. So the black students, in turn, had to walk out of the school to show that they're not going to accept whatever behavior the school is accepting. You know, and just to hear that, I'm like, what? The teachers didn't stop it? But for her, she was like, no, of course they did. Like, you know, for her, she's like, no, this is a different time. And I'm like, that's my mom. Like, I don't know how to explain it, but I'm like, that's my mom that went through that? That's crazy. Like, it's not that far removed. And I think people think when we talk about, oh, this happened so many years ago. No, I'm talking about stories that happened with my mother. Mm-hmm. So in her actual school that she experienced. And that's not just the only one, but that's a story. So, again, going back to the Tulsa, the massacre, that's a massacre. And it's not taught because these are uncomfortable conversations that need to be had, because then people will understand why if a black person sees a cop killing another black person, they can maybe understand why people are that upset, why people are angry enough to break into buildings, why people are upset, crying, and feel like this is it. Some people are like, this happened to your ancestors. How are you so mad? No, we know stories of things that happened to our cousins, to our nephews, to my mother. So just to put it in perspective, because people don't realize that. And we also know those Tulsa stories because we were taught those, even though, you know, like you said, you didn't even know. I knew that. Like, you know, I knew that because we were told that, because we have to get taught that stuff, because we have to know, we have to be prepared. We have to be on the lookout. Like, mm-hmm. We're the ones that are getting targeted.
Right.
So you brought up the police brutality part, and I want to hit on that quickly. 3 weeks ago, Bubba Wallace, obviously the lone African-American in NASCAR, and we're a NASCAR podcast, so I think we got a hit on it a little bit, had a Instagram interview with Ty Dillon, who, just like us with you, wanted to be more informative. I'm speaking of Ty. He brought up many times where police kind of sought him out, and he was judged based on the color of his skin. So have you ever been in a position like that where you were treated differently by the police because you're black?
Well, I'm going to answer the question and say yes, but not because I was black. I actually was treated differently because they knew who I was. And so for me, that's not good either. You know, like I don't think that the police should have preferential treatment in a sense. And that's why, that's how a bias occurs. Because look, same cop that might have pulled me over and let me go because, oh, hey, Renee, we love you here. You know, like, go on, Renee. They won't know that's my nephew. He's a 6'5". 18-year-old, and they might not have that same response to my nephew. He might be intimidating.
Right.
So that's why when people are like, well, you know, what stories, what have people done to you? That's not the point. The point is that maybe I do get a pass because I'm an athlete, but my family's not going to get that pass. My nephew's not going to get that pass. My parents didn't. So people need to stop thinking about what exactly your situation is and think about that kid in elementary school that's the only black kid during Black History Month. Think about our parents that experienced different things, because people can't connect to why or feel strongly enough to say that. There's so many reasons why. So I think that people start to understand black history, they'll more so start to understand why black people feel a need to make a change.
Now I'm going to ask a follow-up. I don't know if you feel that this instance over the past 4 or 5 weeks is any different, but as a white male, I feel like it is different, and people are starting to speak up and you know, want to make change. Maybe that's just white man and me speaking. I don't know. But do you feel like there's more of an effort over the last month?
Like, first of all, I'm on a NASCAR podcast. Okay, so now, like, I'm just being real. Like, I'm on a NASCAR podcast. We're talking NASCAR in black cultures, and that's different. You know, like, the black culture is trying to get behind NASCAR because we want to support a Bubba Wallace. We want to support culture. Like, NASCAR is open too. Like, they never were not open, but we see that they're trying to make efforts. Okay. We see that people like you know, you're trying to make, you bringing me on up to let's talk about it. That's the effort. And for me, that's what people are always like, well, how will you know if you did the right thing? It's not about, like, I don't know if I had X amount of people register. That's great. That more people register to vote. But the wow factor. It's like me sitting here having a conversation with you guys. Companies reaching out to me to have that conversation with their employees. I don't know how people are going to like see the tangible things, but those are very real things that are happening. Companies are really trying to change. There's different people really trying to understand. So I don't know. People have to know what to look for, I would say.
And I'm kind of going down that same path just in the last 24 hours since we had this incident happen in the garage. Not only do we have the show of solidarity before the race today, but anger in everybody's attitude. 5 years ago in NASCAR, you didn't get that anger. It was just like they acknowledged it happened, and then they went on as if nothing had ever changed. Today, people are legitimately angry that their fellow human is getting treated like shit. And I apologize for the language, but that's where we need to be, is that we don't accept it. And when people act a fool, we call them out and we don't allow them to have an influence. And I guess the destiny of this is, how do you feel your focus is going to be able to make this influence and reach out to people? You're never going to change how people feel, right, but you can change the way they act and the way they understand. And if they learn, they can change their own means of way making it feel. So how do you envision, what are you thinking you're going to be able to try to do to make that feeling change? Because you said you want to be felt, and that's what we're trying to do.
I think conversations, you know, people like conversations, but every action starts from a conversation. Every action starts from a thought, right? So if you have, and this kind of like this pathway, so if you watch my interviews from the beginning to now, this pathway was kind of like given to me in a sense where people really started reaching out to me and like, okay, I think that you can have a good approach of how we can talk about this. And so I realized that maybe we just need to have like these conversations, like with you guys. Like for instance, in the past 24 hours, you start to see, right? Like a lot of people aren't surprised that a noose was left in one of the NASCAR people's, like a lot of people aren't surprised about that. But what should be surprising is that, wow, the response is like NASCAR is not with this. The fans are not with this. Like this is a new NASCAR.
Right.
That's what you need. You know what I mean? That's the thing that we need to focus on. So for me, I think that that's going to be my thing. Like, let's lead these conversations so that people can, again, understand. Like, even if you tell people and we have this conversation, they're like, yeah, still not buying it. That's different than some people didn't know about the Tulsa Massacre. Some people don't know about the noose in Bubba Wallace's garage. Like, some people just don't know that stuff. So if we give you all the information and you still feel the same way you do or don't want to change, that's fine. But we still have to have these conversations because there's a lot of people, once they see, like, wow, okay, Renee's mom went through a lot. I get why she's sitting out. You know, people are like, I get it. So people need to know the backstory to why to get it. So you have to have a conversation to get there.
Yeah, you can definitely tell, at least I can, that NASCAR is trying to change, at least from the top down. Neff said 5 years ago, I think even 2 years ago, this probably wouldn't have happened, you know, the reaction that we got over the past, not even 24 hours yet. So, kudos to NASCAR for trying to change, and it looked like they're going to change. And since we're on that topic, Renee, on June 12th, you said you were becoming a NASCAR fan on Twitter.
Yeah, let's go down this route.
Yeah, now. We've only got limited time with you, but what led to that ultimate decision?
Okay, so I have an esports show on Twitch, and one of the topics on our show came up was that a lot of fans were voicing their opinion that NASCAR was banning the Confederate flag. You even saw one of the racers retired, Byre. That's what I was saying. But you saw a lot of different things going on. I'm like, what in the world is going on over there at NASCAR? That's literally how I found out about it. And then so I started researching more. You know, I'm Googling, and I'm like, okay, so NASCAR is actually trying to do something. You know, like, I started seeing what NASCAR was doing because it wasn't just the banning. The banning wasn't the first steps for NASCAR. You know, they were already doing some things trying to make it more inclusive. So I saw that, and I'm like, let me voice my opinion. The NASCAR, I'm here now because I like what you guys are doing with the place. I see you, and let's get it popping. And then I was just like, and I know nothing about NASCAR, so y'all help me because I didn't want to just be a – and that literally was how it all happened. And the fans, like, I had no idea. Like, maybe y'all know because y'all in the world. I had no idea what I was getting myself into in a good way. But I just told them, like, yo, I'm trying to learn about NASCAR. Help me out. I know, just assume I know nothing. And let's just work from that.
Like it. Now, NASCAR has had a Drive for Diversity program the better part of 15 years, maybe even 20 years.
2003.
And it has really not done what I would think it should have done. Now, they, you know, they'll tout that they've had a few drivers make it to the cup level, but we still don't have an African-American crew chief. We have very limited guys on pit road that are working on these cars. And it just seems to me that if it was really going to take hold, it should have been better than this. So from your end of things, and they just put a new head in charge of diversity in the sport, do you think that you have the ability to reach out to other people in the African-American community or Hispanic communities or just minority communities in general and kind of help recruit them into the Drive for Diversity so that we can really drive interest in the sport for, you know, 5 or 10 years down the road? Because it's going to take a while for it to develop, but I feel like this is a real groundswell opportunity right now where we could build the sport across all ethnicities.
Absolutely. And honestly, there's no better time than now. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like the whole world is ready to pivot. Like that's, you can just tell, like everybody's like, all right, we get it. This is terrible. Let's figure it out. So NASCAR should call me, first of all. But I think that the way you do it is you so NASCAR, by banning the flag, you know, that almost went viral because that was like something tangible. And one of the things I'm talking about with these businesses, and they're trying to bring me in, and I'm like, well, the first problem is you guys probably need to hire like representation. So I'm glad that NASCAR is starting to do that because, and this is just the true honesty, if you have a group of white management, it's hard for them to create diversity programs that's going to work. Like, it's just hard because they don't even know what is our culture, what is diverse, what would appeal to a culture of mine. So I think that that's half the problem too. And I know that they did hire somebody that is of color in that position, but that's the right step. So I know that they recently did that. NASCAR, good job. Because when I was hearing these stories, like some of these NASCAR people are legends. So I'm like, just tell me some crazy NASCAR stories. And half of them sounded fake, I'm not going to lie. And then I'm like, really? And then they send like the video to go along with it. I'm like, okay, NASCAR is some wild men out here. Like, they are wild.
Oh, you get back into the 50s and 60s, you'll see some really crazy stuff.
Davey, but, I learned all about Davey now with the eyes. Wasn't his name
Davey Allison?
Yeah, Davey Allison when he flipped at Pocono and his eyes about popped out of his head.
Yeah, that sounds fake. And then I saw it was a real thing. Like, that sounds fake. So
And he got in the car the next week and drove. That's the part that sounds fake. He raced the very next week and won the race.
All of it sounded fake. And that's why I'm like, yo, people would be in. So that's what I said. Like, they need to know the right approach. Like, people like stuff like that. Like, now, maybe they were already doing that, so let me not. But I just know things that appeal to me. And so once I started retweeting that, you can see that a lot of other people that maybe weren't in the NASCAR was like, this is a crazy story or this, like, you know, storyline. So I don't know. I just think that there's different ways to appeal. But I like what NASCAR is doing with the play. Shame on whoever did that in the recession crash. But that's why we're doing. That's why we're having this conversation.
Well, and like,
I love that they put Brandon in this diversity role because he's been in the sport for a long time. So it's not, you know, they brought Max in years ago to run the thing starting in like 2008. He was a record company executive. He didn't know anything about racing. So, yes, he was African-American, so he understands the culture side, but he didn't know anything about the racing side. So now they've got somebody that's embedded in racing that's moved up into this. So that's going to be good, but I really hope, and like you said, I hope NASCAR calls you and reaches out to you and Bernie Pollard and these other people that are outside of the sport but can really influence to get people interested, because I think that'll help us build that roster of people to come up and we can really truly integrate the garage area.
Yeah, and look, I mean, the fans, that's why I said NASCAR just has to make the steps because the fans are ready. Mm-hmm. Like, if nothing else, the fans have shown that they're ready. It's not like NASCAR is going to have to, I mean, you're going to have some old school fans that may come kicking and screaming.
There's always people that hate change.
Yeah, but for the majority, like, whatever NASCAR does moving forward, the fans are with it because you can just tell by how mad people were about what just happened. Mm-hmm. So imagine them saying, you know what, this is what we're doing now, and people are going to get behind it because they're going to be like, thank you, NASCAR. Like, we're not going to take that. So, I mean, I think NASCAR is in a great position. Honestly, I think the WNBA, any NBA, any sports league right now, everybody, like all eyes on us.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And, you know, you brought up the flag, obviously, the Confederate flag. And Neff will attest to this. They were frequent for years, Neff, right? I mean, and then just...
Well, they used to be at Darlington, Johnny Reb, who was basically a rebel soldier, at the end of the race, the winner had to stop on a front stretch, and Johnny Reb would climb on the hood of his car holding the Confederate flag, and they would drive the victory lane with Johnny Reb riding on the hood of the car.
Yeah, and you know what? And speaking of that, oh, I hope I'm not messing this story up, but I think it's Dale Earnhardt talked about how he had, you know, a black woman that worked for him, and she was talking about how she was uncomfortable with the flag that was on his car.
Yeah, and he had a bumper sticker on his truck.
And he scraped it off. And so that's what I mean by having a conversation. So that's a perfect example. Like, he didn't even know. Like, so when I, like, let me just tell you from my point of view. When I drive in an area and I start to see a lot of Confederate flags, I know that I need to turn around and go the other way. So people don't even know that that's how somebody like me perceives the Confederate flag. Like, I get a little, if I see too many in a certain area, I'm like, all right, maybe I shouldn't be here. Like, I'm probably not welcome here. So for his, for somebody that worked for him to tell him, and he took it right off. And that's my point. Like, he took it right off, and because he didn't know. And I think a lot of people don't even know certain things, that how it triggers our mind. But for me, growing up in West Virginia, I'm very familiar with the Confederate flag. And to me, I know that that's not necessarily a good welcoming sign for black people. So as a league, that was a smart move to get rid of it. Because if I walked up to a race and I see all kinds of Confederate flags, I'm going to be like, oh, maybe this isn't, like, maybe I should have came with a group of friends. Or, you know, like, you start to ask yourself questions like, oh, maybe I should leave before it gets too late. Like, you know, like, that's the type of things that a minority might have to ask themselves, that maybe a white group of people might not think about.
Well, now, we're running out of time, so do you have any final questions for Renee?
No, I'm loving this. So we can keep going, because you guys are actually my last one before my break. So if you do have questions, great. If you don't, that's fine too. But I really, like, think that this is what needs to happen. So I'm like, if you have anything, and it could be white people shouldn't ask questions, or you know what I mean?
Right.
Because, like, some people were asking me, you know, well, now we're starting to get in trouble, because I was asking a lot of my black friends, you know, how can I help? What can we do? And then, like, because the narrative changed to where a lot of black people were like, look, we don't have time to educate all of our white friends on how you should be acting. Like, you know, like, so that became a narrative too. So, look, I'm here to talk, but I can't understand too how I had a lot of those, how can we, like, you know, I had a lot of those texts. Like, we want to help. How can we help? The one thing I would say to answer that question would be, there's a lot of times where we're not in the room. Like, black people are just not in the room where those weird jokes are being made. Yeah. Or even when you hear how they're selecting somebody for a job, and you know that they're just selecting somebody's second cousin once removed that may not be the best candidate. Like, black people are not going to always be in the room. So for a lot of the white people or even different cultures are saying, how can we help? When we're not in the room, still be that voice. You know, it's easy if I'm standing right there and you're like, hey, don't say that about Renee. She's nice. That's easy to say when I'm standing right
there. When you're
here.
There. But when you're not there. Right.
When we're not there, that's the conversation that I think is the most important one, because that's typically where people speak freely. You know, like, that's the conversations we're never going to hear because we won't be in there. So for anybody asking, like, you know, how can we help? Be that voice in the room when we're not.
Well, I think.
Now, do you get pushback from the African-American community because of your athlete stature? Like, hey, you're living in Buckhead, okay? You're not living downtown in the hood. You're up in that sheltered little area on the north side where all the yuppies are hanging out. You get folks coming at you saying, hey, you don't really know the plight of black people.
Yep, definitely. I got, you know, there's another thing. I had people coming at me for wanting to support the NASCAR. And not just people, like some people that I actually know. So I was a little bit surprised by that, but people were like, NASCAR is known to be racist and this and that, and why would you get behind them? Like, you know what I mean? Like, people felt that I shouldn't get behind NASCAR because of their history. And I'm like, look, if we don't get behind anybody, because, like, we'll be at a standstill. That's what I tell people. Like, if I just stay mad at NASCAR forever, and you stay mad at your boss forever, and you stay mad at, like, how, like, that's not...
Yeah,
that's
we never
not
move a, forward.
We will never. So I got a big backlash, by the way, about NASCAR. I'm not going to lie. And this is from some people in the community that felt like, you know, I'm putting myself out there for somebody that wouldn't necessarily put themselves out there for me. You know, like, that's what people are saying. Like, look, you're going to go be, you know, banging the drum for NASCAR, and NASCAR doesn't care about you. Like, you know, that's how certain people are thinking. So,
well, hopefully the display before the race today will change your mind about that.
Yeah, I think that's changing, and it's going to continue to change with the leadership we have. We've seen it over the past month, and I think, like I said, that's just going to continue and be more welcoming to other, you know, ethnicity groups, black, you know, African Americans, Hispanics, doesn't matter. And that's the way it should be. It's the way it always should have been.
And there has to be a certain point where the change happens. You know, I don't know, like, people are so, and I get it, people are mad, people are angry, and I do get it. Look, I told you I'm mad about stuff that happened. I'm just finding out about my snook. But, like, how can we move forward? Like, how can, like, yes, we're mad, but how can we keep going? Like, I'm mad, too. Like, I want, like, I be telling people, like, I'm mad, too. Like, I know NASCAR wasn't the most welcoming always, but you can't just look at what somebody did before, you know? And some people are like, well, sorry, is it going to change the history? It's not. But I'm just thinking about for my nephews, for my nieces. Like, I know that we're still, like, you know, I know people are scorned. Like, this is, like, deep. Like, my snook, she got expelled, and later she got brought back because they made a lot of fuss. But, you know, she's had a lot of stuff happen to her, so I'm just as mad as the next minority. But I just have a different way I go about it. Like, I think that people don't get my difference.
Well, Renee, we only have 40 minutes on Zoom, unfortunately. So I think we got to wrap it up. But thank you.
We want to have you back.
Yes.
This isn't your only visit.
I appreciate that. Like, I would love to have more conversations because the questions you asked, I think a lot of people feel the same way. Like, probably had the same questions y'all had, so... whenever you guys want me back, I'll be here.
And there's so much more that I want to know. I know Neff probably wants to know a lot more.
Absolutely.
And you're a good source for that. So I appreciate your time dearly. And have a good day. And thank you for speaking out and helping the world change.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me.
All right, y'all. There you have it. Great conversation there with Renee Montgomery. I told y'all when I prefaced the interview that she really brought it. And it's clear she wants to make an impact in the world, obviously foregoing the 2020 WNBA season. I really enjoy chatting about all the good that has and will, I think, continue to come out of the bad of what happened last month and even, you know, moments earlier this year. And it allows people like Neff and I the ability to learn and get more educated on this topic of African Americans facing racism still to this day, as crazy as that is. Really happy with NASCAR. I know with how everything was handled on Sunday, it's going to give the sport a temporary black eye, I think. But I'm thrilled to hear that there was no hate crime from someone in the garage, one of our own, obviously hanging a noose, which turned out to be an overhead garage door rope. The advancements that NASCAR has made and the unity showed over the past 3 weeks by the drivers, leadership in NASCAR, it's not going unnoticed. And if this was 5 years ago, I don't know if we see those same results. That's it for this week's show. We got 4 races on hand this weekend in Pocono. Obviously, hopefully there's no weather in the area. That might be wishful thinking, given that it seems to always rain in the Pocono Mountains when NASCAR's in town. And obviously, with our track record since we've been back from COVID-19, that shut down. It's been hard this year. We'll break it down all down next week. Until then, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to our Front Stretch Podcast on Apple Podcasts. We out.